Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Glad you're with us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Coming to Chicago, kind of, at the Improv in Schaumburg. Go right now as we have our conversation. Chicago.improv.com. Coming to the Chicago Improv will be Gary Owen. Don't forget to go there Friday, July 13th, two shows, 8 and 10:15. Saturday on the 14th, two shows, 7 and 9:15. And Sunday the 15th at 7 o'clock, Gary Owen is with us here on ESPN 1000. Gary, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Gary, tell me this, man. How does it feel to be the most famous face in Ohio now that LeBron is gone?
It feels good, man. It's been a terrible couple weeks to be in Ohio. You got Stipe Miocic just lost to Daniel Cormier.
Right.
He's an Ohio guy. LeBron left, an Ohio guy. Jesus Christ, the Reds lost two in a row to the Cubs.
Right.
The past 2 days, heartbreaking losses. I'm looking forward to the Bengals. You know, I don't think I've ever looked forward to Andy Dalton so much in my life.
Is there any brother that you know in the history of your life that has more job security than Marvin Lewis?
No, I think he has a sex tape on Mike Brown. There's just no other explanation. He's got him in some compromising positions. I've just never seen that way. And especially when you think about, look what the Eagles and Rams have done. When they changed head coaches and completely changed the culture, it was like, you know, the talent was always there, but they just brought in new coaches and the guys started to play for them. And I'm like, ah, you know, it's a bad off season when our job is the offensive line coach.
Right. I've never seen anything like
this. That was like the huge news. Like, yo, we got the Cowboys offensive line coach. Great.
Gary, I've never seen anything like this, man. I mean, after all these years, you know there's time for a change, but Marvin is still in there. It's not like he's just won one Super Bowl and he's just, you know, kind of just lingered. There's nothing coming out of Cincinnati. No championships. No, what's going on with this?
When they say the definition of insanity is keep doing the same things and expecting different results.
Right.
And that's what we're doing right now. And I guess what it is. You know, obviously, Paul Brown was a genius, was an amazing head coach, amazing scout of talent, and he was a great GM and for the Bengals. And then the son took over, but everyone can't do what their dad did. I mean, Michael Jordan's kids didn't turn out like Michael Jordan. My dad's a FedEx driver. I can't deliver a box.
Right.
I could never deliver packages like my dad. He was a beast.
Don't forget.
It's so frustrating. And right now, I'm completely drinking the Kool-Aid again. I'm like, I think we got a shot. I do. Joe Mixon, watch out.
All you have is hope. That's all you have, Gary, right now. That's all you have is hope with the Bengals.
I don't know. We'll see what happens, man. It's a good time to be a Bengals fan right now, preseason.
Right.
Good time.
Exactly. Gary's going to be at the Chicago Improv again over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Go to chicagoimprov.com. Gary Owen joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Do you still have your Bengals truck?
No. We did that for the TV show, but no, I got it unwrapped once we got done. I'm back to just the regular Tahoe.
What? Didn't you have room in the garage to keep that thing?
I had a TV show on BT called the Gary Owen Show.
Sure.
And 2 years ago for my birthday, my wife surprised me. She wrapped my Chevy Tahoe, because it was already black. She wrapped it in orange tiger stripes. So, I mean, I was a hit that season, 2016. My truck was a bigger hit than the team that year.
Right. So now you just went just regular Tahoe now.
Nah, just regular. I'm just regular driving now. We took the wrap off. I thought it was me. I thought I jinxed him.
I'll ask you about this because last time we had our brief conversation, we were talking about LeBron James going to Los Angeles. So with LeBron going to L.A., I just think that he was so disenchanted with Dan Gilbert, the owner, and just the whole thing with Cleveland. He just wanted to bounce. Even if there's no championships, he just wanted to be in L.A. Do you foresee him winning any championships while he's with the Lakers?
Oh, yeah. My prediction is they're gearing up for 2019. Mm-hmm. I think Cleveland, they went a little premature in 2015 just because the East was so weak. But I think even in Cleveland, they were geared up for 2016. I think the Lakers, you know, Magic and them, they're not going to sit around and wait. They're gearing up for their big free agent class 2019 because, you know, you got to look at Klay Thompson will be a free agent. Does he want to move on and be Batman and Robin with LeBron? That's a perfect player for LeBron to play with. Spread the court, dish it out. He hits that three wide open. And DeMarcus Cousins, you know, he we're going to find out if he did the smart thing or not by signing the 1-year deal. And if he all he's got to do is a couple good playoff games, he's going to get a max deal. If he go to L.A. next year, so there's a lot of great free agents out there. But I think the Lakers are geared up for 2019. Just my prediction.
Gary, do you remember the first time a sports figure came to one of your shows and it surprised you? Like, you didn't know he was going to be in the club, and then you saw him front row, and you're like, wow, I can't believe that this guy came to my show.
Oh, it's easy. Shaq. I met my wife through Shaq. Okay. Shaq would play for the Lakers. He had a clothing line called Twism. Stood for The World Is Mine. And he brought his staff out to a comedy club one night, and I went up. And they weren't there to see me, but they were there at the show. And so Shaq was sitting there, and then his staff was, and I wanted to meet him after the show, so I went out behind the Comedy Store in L.A., and I met him, and that's also where I met my wife. And Shaq still takes credit for introducing us to this day. That's an easy one right there.
Okay. Well, I want to know about the process. What was it like for you sitting in that green room trying to get on BET's Comic View? What was that like for you?
I didn't give it much thought. I've always just wanted to tell jokes to whoever. So, I honestly didn't think nothing of it. I would have went on Telemundo if I spoke Spanish.
Wherever the hustle is, right?
Yeah, I would have went on CMT. I could care less. I just want to make people laugh. I don't care who's in the audience.
Okay.
So, BET was the first one that had open auditions, and anybody could audition. And I said, all right. So I just went.
Gary Owen is going to be in Chicago, kind of. We'll be at Schaumburg, again, chicago.improv.com. There, again, two shows on Friday, two shows on Saturday, one on Sunday at 7 o'clock. Get there early. As I told Deion Cole, you know, you got to make sure you get there early because as I stood there in my gaiters with my wife standing there, it took a while. So if you're there late, you're going to pay for it. So definitely get there early to see Gary Owen at the Chicago Improv in Schaumburg. When did you first realize, Gary, that your brand of comedy resonated with black audiences?
Oh, man. I don't know. You know what it was? It's just when I started, I couldn't get up in any of the quote-unquote mainstream rooms. But, the you know, I could get up at all the black quote-unquote hood spots in San Diego. And when I first started, I wasn't even doing comedy clubs. I remember I was just trying to get on stage anywhere. So I would go to, like, karaoke bars. And instead of singing karaoke songs, I would tell jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew, oh, here comes the funny dude. You know, I just, it really isn't like my jokes resonate. They resonate with everybody. It's just, you know, the black people were exposed to me early just because they're BET, and most of the movies I've been on have black lead actors.
I think the other reason why is just because.
Very much like Karl Malone in Utah.
Yeah,
very much like Karl Malone.
It's not like Karl Malone.
His game is good wherever, but, you know, he really resonated with them jazz fans.
That's not okay. Oh, you know, we're gonna go with that. Okay, cool. That's what happened. Yeah, sure.
Karl Malone, the comedy, baby.
Yes, that makes sense. Sure. So usually, Gary, you know how we are able to have a sense of humor because it comes from maybe somebody in our family, someone that you saw that maybe just stumbling down drunk or just always had funny anecdotes. Who was the funniest person in your family growing up?
Well, I ran away a lot. But I would say my dad, and my mom and dad were never together, but my real dad is a funny dude. He's a funny dude. So I would say I get my sense of humor from him.
You remember anything?
Yeah, he's definitely a funny dude.
What do you remember?
Is well, there's a lot of things he said, but I can't say on the air.
You could give us
there's
something.
There's a lot of things he said. I've said it in my act before, but I can't say it on the air.
Okay. All right. Is there someone in comedy that you enjoy growing up? Because usually it comes from comedy records or seeing something on TV. Do you remember comedians that you enjoy growing up?
Two I enjoyed the most growing up was Eddie Murphy and Sam Kinison.
Polar opposites. Without question. Yeah, why those two?
Well, Eddie was the most popular with Delirious and Raw. And then Sam was the one we had cassette tape. We had cassette tapes, and we were driving around in my buddy's cars. And like, I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you said that about God.
Right.
We just couldn't believe it. Like, he was doing something totally different. So it was Sam Kinison and Eddie Murphy, the two that resonated with me the most growing up.
Gary, are you? How much are you enjoying your podcast? It's the Get Some podcast. You can find that on Apple Music, TuneIn, or wherever you find your podcast. The Get Some podcast. You can download that as we have our conversation here. Well, what do you? How much are you enjoying the podcast business?
Oh, I love it. I didn't think I'd like it. I always thought I'm not doing no podcast, and now I'm like this. I can't wait to do it every week. It's just there's so much to talk about, and then. It's fascinating that people are interested in your life. I mean, it's a cool thing, but it's just, you know, I always feel like my podcast is I get to give my opinions on things, and then it's almost like I'm peeling back the curtain as to what's going on in my life, you know, off stage, because people, a lot of times, they don't get that from comedians.
No, first of all, sometimes they just say, just laugh, just make me laugh, and they don't want to hear about serious issues or want to know your thoughts on politics or sports or whatever. They just want to hear people laugh. So when you have a perspective, I guess that's what entices people to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's something I look forward to every week. I hate it. When I'm on the road, you know, I'm always like, where can I go do it at? You know, I got that Yeti and on my laptop, but it's, you know, it's just a nice little outlet for me.
Well, who are you mistaken for the most when people see you?
Tommy from Power.
Yeah.
Joseph Sikora, who's a Chicago guy, by the way.
He is, yes.
Yep.
How about The Miz?
The Miz is an Ohio guy, and I don't get The Miz too much. I used to get Troy Aikman quite a bit.
Right.
And Biff from Back to the Future.
Now, Biff was over at one point, right? There was people who was into Biff from Back in the Future, back in the day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so Biff, Tommy, and Troy Aikman. I'm like a hybrid of those three.
Is that what it's okay? How you told a story on the Breakfast Club, I think maybe earlier this year, maybe last year, you were talking about how there's so much sensitivity in comedy. There was a show you did, was it in Florida? It was a wedding party, and they walked out on you because they didn't like the type of comedy that you were doing. How often are you getting that? And how sensitive are people today when you're doing a set?
Oh, that's the last time I got it. They didn't walk out because of my jokes. They walked out because, one, the club didn't have any control of the club, and they weren't really there to see stand-up. Somebody got married Saturday. They came to the Sunday show because they happened to be in Marco Island, Florida, an extra day, and they just still thought they was at a party. So they kept interrupting. They interrupted the host, they interrupted the feature, and then they started to interrupt me. And so I went in on them, and then they all got kicked out. But that's the last time it happened. That doesn't happen a lot. But the funniest was when they tried to get the crowd on their side, and the crowd turned on them. Oh, my God. I can't say what they said on air, but, oh, it was so funny. Because I had to kick them out. I was like, you guys got to go. And the girl goes, well, if you would be telling some funny jokes, we wouldn't be talking, right? And the whole crowd was just started like cussing them out. You better sit your thing down, Bill. They left there so fast.
Gary, that's the best when you don't have to say anything and the crowd is doing the work for you, right?
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful night, actually, after they left.
It was much better, right? What are your memories of Chicago? You're going to be in Chicago, kind of. So what are your memories of coming here?
I've done numerous events for the Bulls in the past. I love the Reinsdorfs. They always take care of me if me and my family want to come to a game. Mm-hmm. I was hot on the Bears when my boy played here, Brandon Marshall. That was my guy. Yeah. Still my guy. I had a good sports memories with the with the Bears. I know there's a few guys from the White Sox reached out to me on social media, so they're going to come out to a game. But maybe they should practice more. I might want to tell them, you guys don't come to my show and stay in the batting cages for a couple more days.
As a Sox fan, I will take that. I will take that right between the eyes because it has been tough.
Somebody in the front office called and said some of the guys want to come out. And I said, yeah, of course I'll take care of them. And then offered me tickets to a game. And I looked at the schedule. So they do have some day games this weekend. So I'm definitely going to go to a White Sox game this weekend in between my shows. And so, you know, and my son will be with me. I don't know if you know, my son's doing stand-up now.
He is.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. His first set's on YouTube. He's pretty good. So he's going to go up a couple nights and mess around.
Would you want him to open for you for any shows?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My goal is to open for him one day. I want to have the King Griffey Senior Junior release.
I know. I want him to take care of me. Okay, that makes sense. Again, ChicagoImprov.com, that's where you get your tickets. Get there early at the Chicago Improv for two shows, July 13th, again, 8 and 10:15 on Saturday, on the 14th, two shows, 7 and 9:15, and on the 15th on Sunday, the single show, 7 o'clock on the 15th on Sunday. Gary, I'm glad you spent some time. I did the whole interview without adding an S to your name like most of us do. just play Gary
that,
Owen. Now, Gary, you Gary Owens, right? Is you Gary Owens?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Man, get there early.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Gary Owen with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Hilarious guy. And again, he's going to be at the Chicago Improv on the 13th, 14th, and 15th in Schaumburg. You can get tickets at the box office or go to ChicagoImprov.com for tickets. Two shows on Friday the 13th, two on Saturday, and one on the 15th. So it's good to get a chance to talk to Gary Owen, who's a great sports fan and knows some stuff about Chicago sports. He gave a shot at the White Sox. I guess it was deserved. And he was with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We're going to hear from Jesse Rogers in just a little bit. As the Cubs, they fell short against the San Francisco Giants 5-4. As the Cubs lose that series 2 out of 3, now they take on San Diego starting on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right into the All-Star break. I'll tell you this, when it comes to this Cubs team, at 52-38 on the season, I believe that this team is built for a playoff berth. I think that the Cubs are the best team offensively in the National League. Now, you might have numbers and xBits and all these other different numbers to tell me that the Cubs are not the best team offensively, but I'm just telling you based on my knowledge of watching the Cubs and watching the National League, as good as the Arizona Diamondbacks have been this season, as good as the Milwaukee Brewers have been this season, a young upstart Atlanta Braves team, I will just side with the team that won the World Series a couple of years. And I will say, offensively speaking, I think that the Cubs are in a great position to be able to have a nice run in the playoffs. Now, I will stop right there in my praise, because the big issue that you know, like I know, is that the pitching has to be better. In today's game, it was Mike Montgomery. And Montgomery, to me, is one of the heroes of this baseball team, because going back to the year that the Cubs won the World Series, one of the key signings, I thought, for the Cubs was having Mike Montgomery there. To be a starter, to be a reliever, whatever you needed, Mike Montgomery was there. And so now I look at 2018, and while the Cubs are struggling to try to find out who the number two starter really is, or who the number three starter really is, I think that you look at this team offensively and say, if they continue to play the way they've been playing as of late, starting in the month of July, there's no one's going to stop the Cubs offensively. Now, it's what Jesse and I have been talking about so much here in the season, the first half. You have to solidify and identify who's going to be the starters after John Lester, and who you're going to pick up as far as relief pitching from the left side, because down the stretch, you just don't want for the offense to be strong and then the pitching to lack. That has to be shored up. As Jesse wrote on ESPN.com, he talked about some of the question marks and guys that could be traded that the Cubs might be looking at. So that's something to really delve into. Go to ESPN.com as we talk to Jesse Rogers here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN app, who wrote a fine column really, really revealing some of the names that could be available as far as the trade deadline is concerned. Jesse joins us here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Jess.
Hey, Jay Hood. What's going on, pal?
Well, you know what's going on. Lost 2 out of 3. You know what's going to happen there. But I think that I thought it was a very well-played series, Jess. I thought the close games, I thought this one was a very good game, and the Cubs fell short. What'd you think of the performance of the Cubs today?
Well, I like how they battled back from 4-0. That was really impressive. I mean, they basically pitched a shutout after that, more than a 9-inning shutout. They went 12 innings without giving up another run, and then finally this rookie making his MLB debut in his second inning of work gives it up. You know, they've played too many of these extra inning games. Their bullpen is taxed. It is coming back. It may come back to hurt them a little bit. You know, Joe's trying not to overuse C-Shack, trying not to overuse Edwards. They really could use some 8-9 inning performances out of their pitchers, but we know that's not the case these days. They did get 8 1/3 out of Hendricks. It was two extra inning losses. Oh, come on. I mean, it's a close series. Let's face it. But you're right. Right now, they almost have to rely on their offense because they're not getting, you know, consistent starts. First two games were good. Montgomery battled after giving up the 4. If he fields the ball in the first inning, that changes the whole game, but you know, that's part of it. There were some mistakes by both sides, but I did like the intensity, sort of the closeness of these games, and, you know, teams forcing the other team on defense because of the aggressive base running the first two games. But today they just came up short after getting in a hole 4-0. You know, a little bit of a hole themselves in the middle of that lineup with Rizzo. We could talk about that. But, you know, the Cubs are playing good ball. You come out west, weird things happen. It's a weird ballpark. It's kind of like an equalizing ballpark. Nobody has an advantage. The ball doesn't carry. Unless you hit it to right center, you can't really get a lot of extra bases in this ballpark. Hard to hit the ball out of the park, although day games like today, they did have a few more home runs. So just a weird series. I bet it'll be a weird one in San Diego. Just sometimes you come out west and weird things happen to the Cubs especially.
What do you think is the best position for Zobrist? You saw him out there. He played left and right. The bobble in right field there, and it's kind of like, you know, if Hayward's out there, there's no bobble. There's no runners trying to advance in that situation. What do you think is the really best position for Zobrist?
Well, his best position is probably still second base, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But that's not best for the team. So, you know, when Javi's out, he plays second. We know that. Other than that, it left or right. I mean, I guess left. He doesn't really have a right fielder's arm, and that's a big right field here at AT&T Park. But I still think second base is his best position. He knows it the best. He still looks pretty solid there. But compared to Baez, you know, it's a different story. Baez is on a whole another level. So you stick him out left, and you're not hurt by Zobrist in the outfield, especially if it is left field.
Hayward once again coming through with the home run off of Cueto. Cueto, by the way, is just he's one of your friends that you'd have in college and say, "Hey, Jesse, watch this. I'm going to do this wind up, and now watch this. I'm going to do this wind up."
Yeah.
I saw Gene Garber. I saw Kent DeColvey. I saw he does 3 or 4 different wind ups, and it's kind of interesting because Cueto's just trying to throw pitches in different areas and doing different one-ups. He's just very crafty that way. But Hayward got a hold of one, and he just continues to just play well this season.
Yeah, someone tweeted at me, Rizzo and Hayward switched bodies, you know? I mean, look at the back of the baseball card. You'd think it Rizzo's is Hayward's line and Hayward's is Rizzo's line. You're just so impressed by the way he's battled. 2 years now working on this, and he's finally coming through. Slugging better, getting on base more, all the things we thought we'd get out of him. It's kind of funny. He started his career, you know, in the 2-hole with the Cubs, fell all the way down. Now he's back kind of solidified in that number 2 spot. I think Joe's going to leave him there, at least against most, you know, all righties and some lefties. And why not? He's doing what a 2-hole guy kind of should do. Little slug, little on base, little bit of everything out of him. Doesn't strike out a ton. No complaints with Jason Hayward. Yeah, he's not going to be 35 home runs. We knew that, you know, kind of when he came here, he wasn't that guy. But he is back to being at least a dangerous hitter.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, under the hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Great column. I was just saying, as we led you in from ESPN.com, it's the column that you promised us. Just kind of look at some of the names that could be traded that maybe some of the Cubs scouts are looking at. I'll start here because I'm sure people will ask you about this as we get close to the deadline. Are there some guys on the bench like a Hap or a Caratini that that could be dangled for a trade?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think so. I don't think they're going to go that route. I don't think they're going to weaken a strength unless it's too good to pass up. You never say never. If Hap and DeGrom are the centerpieces of a deal, you start to talk about it, right? But realistically, I don't think so. I don't think they can get a good enough pitcher back to help them right now and give up a strength on this team, which is depth. But certainly they know what we know. Pitching is more important than position player depth. It just has to be the right pitcher. You're not trading Hap for a number five. That's my point, I don't think. You would trade Hap for a playoff pitcher. You would trade Hap for DeGrom. I mean, obviously you'd need much more than Hap. But that's my feeling. So, yeah, they could be dangled just to see what you might get back. But I just don't think the match is there. And I kind of thought this over the winter that the match wouldn't be there. Back then, I didn't think you could dangle Baez, Russell, or Hap for a number one, you know, number one through three kind of guy. Now you certainly could dangle Baez, but that's not going to happen. But I still don't think Hap, especially, and maybe even Russell, gets you back that playoff pitcher. It's just one of those things that doesn't match up. You're either not getting enough back or you're giving up too much, that kind of thing. So I would say, yes, they'll be dangled, talked about, but I don't think that deal is going to get done.
And you just don't have a lot in the minors either. Like, it's like, what do the Cubs think of Dylan Maples as a future guy?
Well, no, they like him, but he could be in the mix for a trade. I mean, David Bodie. Look, if you trade Hap, you bring up David Bodie, the Cubs probably feel okay with that. But still, he's not a switch hitter with speed that can play the infield and the outfield. Let's face it, you know, Hap has more value than that. Dylan Maples. You know, there's value there. He's a guy that's part of a package. Bodie, Maples, a few other guys. But who knows what that gets you back? You know, I mentioned that article. Jamer Candelario got you Justin Wilson, basically, right? Mm-hmm. So think that way. Think about a decent pitcher, at least at the time, and he's still pretty good now. A decent pitcher for a decent prospect. And Bodie has turned into a decent prospect. He probably wasn't a year ago or 2 years ago. So think of it that way, sort of a B pitcher for a B-level prospect. I think that's what the Cubs are in the market for. I'd be surprised if they pull off some blockbuster.
Well, and it goes along your thinking that we've had our conversations about. You believe that the Cubs can upgrade on the left side of that bullpen because if Montgomery's part of that. Well, in the playoff situation, Montgomery's a long man. He's not a starter. At least I don't. You'd be in trouble.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. You tell me that Darvish and Quintana are going to be great. I mean, you need four in a series, and so I mean, if Darvish is healthy, okay, then maybe you have your four: Hendricks, Lester, Darvish, Quintana. But that's hoping everything goes well. If one of those guys falters right now, certainly Montgomery's ahead of Chatwood. And if Montgomery, after a little bit of break here, and he needs one, if he gets back to the form he showed early when he was starting, that's more like, you know, he moves ahead of Quintana in a way. That's how good he was for a short period of time, at least. So I don't know that Montgomery for sure is in the bullpen in a playoff game. It's probably best. That means the other four are doing their job, but I wouldn't say that for sure.
Did Joe talk about if the game extended, what he'd do as far as pitching? Is Javi an opportunity? Would he get a chance to catch? Well, what happened there?
Well, I mean, if Contreras goes down, then yes, Javi is catching in that moment. Caratini was used up. Schwarber was used up. Baez is the emergency catcher. In fact, I asked Madden about that. You know, Contreras took a foul tip and was on the ground for a few seconds, and he said that Javi was giving him a look in the dugout like, hey, am I up? Am I up? You know, that kind of thing. Or should I get ready? So, yeah, that would have been the case. I think Norwood would have just kept going at that point. You know, it's interesting how much, you know, you want to save your bullpen these days. We've seen it before. Would you pitch a position player instead of a pitcher that was supposed to be down? Cishek and Edwards were both down. Would Joe have gone to a position player next up after this, after James Norwood, instead of them two? I don't know. I didn't get that far with him. But we've seen it before. So I would imagine, yeah, the answer is yes. He might avoid, risk losing the game to save the arms of Cishek and Edwards. So, you know, too many extra inning games, that really screws with the manager, I'll tell you.
Well, I'm glad you spent some time, man. San Diego's next. You going to drive up?
No, that's a little bit too far. L.A. San Diego is fine. San Francisco to San Diego, whole different story. My kids are with me, so we're going to Alcatraz tomorrow, and then I'm getting over to San Diego. Did you see my story on Twitter? I my son and I were in center field walking the grounds at AT&T Park. They have a beer garden there. There's a netting above the beer garden where, you know, home runs are hit. So we're there for 5 minutes just looking, watching the game through some holes in the wall. You know, they put holes in the wall so you can watch the game. And Brian hits his home run there. Ball comes down the net, lands in my hands.
Wow.
So I got a Chris Bryant home run ball for my son after standing there for like 5 minutes. It was a good memory already made. So we're gonna do Alcatraz tomorrow. He'll take the ball home with him, and I'll go on to San Diego.
You're a hero in his eyes with
big
that,
time.
Right?
Big time. I thought just getting him tickets to the game, I thought I was a hero, but now he gets a home run ball.
You're unbelievable. What's the lottery ticket numbers for tonight?
Seriously.
For the Illinois Lottery? That's awesome.
Seriously, absolutely. By the way, we should mention, because I mentioned on Twitter, Anthony Rizzo, 0-for-10 in the series, okay? He's had 4 hits in July. All the numbers across the board are down. I'm not a big war guy, but there's some meaning there. He is a zero war this year. Zero. That means basically he's as good as any replacement player. And then if you just look at like offensive war, runs above replacement, you know, whatever that, don't worry about what it means. Just know this. His runs above replacement is 3. 3. Last year it was like 45. The year before, 57. 3. So offensively, he's really, really just been an average player. He says he's healthy. Joe says he's healthy. I don't know what's going on, but had a really bad series on offense and defense. Something we got to watch moving forward.
My friend, as always, I appreciate it. Try Not to Suck. You can find that at Amazon. That's Jesse's book. Go right there. It's Amazon, Triumph Books, Try Not to Suck, available for you for Labor Day.
Something you do every night, trying not to suck. You do it well. You're the man. Take care, Jay Hood.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. We will have a little Bulls conversation as we hear from Darnell Mayberry. We'll get his thoughts on NBA free agency and the Bulls. That's next on UTH.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
Glad that you're with me here as we talk to you about the Bulls and NBA free agency. We go to The Athletic. A man who does a terrific column for TheAthletic.com is Darnell Mayberry, and he's with me here on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. D, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Man, I know you've been sitting up there watching the Bulls and what's going on here. And I will tell you this. I enjoy watching quarters of the Summer League and just kind of checking in every now and then. When you're not there in person, how do you watch the Summer League? Do you watch all 4 quarters? What's your viewing habits when it comes to Summer League basketball?
You know, it's funny because I was in Vegas for the first 3 games, and I just flew back late last night after they lost to the Hawks. And it dawned on me, I still have to watch these games for work even when I'm not there. So today was the first game that I wasn't there for, and I watched all 4 quarters, and really because Wendell Carter Jr. looks so good, he's been so impressive so far that I really wanted to check him out at every second he was on the court. I mean, he's been that surprising and impressive with what he's doing out there. So for that reason, and Chandler Hutchinson as well, these guys are playing well out there, and I can see why the front office was high on the selections.
I guess from a summer league standpoint, you just don't want guys to be out there looking overwhelmed. And when I see Carter out there from the defensive side, Darnell, that's what stands out to me the most. Like, okay, you can see him coming over to help. You see him being able to talk a little bit and try to get guys together. I mean, sure, it's unfamiliar with him because it's different teammates he hasn't worked with before, but what did you notice most about Carter when you saw him on the floor?
You know, the shot blocking really jumped out. You know, those first 2 games, I think he had 8 or 9 in the first 2 games, maybe it was 6 or 7, I don't know. I think he had 5 the first game and like 4 the second game. So that really jumped out, just the way he was rejecting shots. But then a funny thing happened, you know, in that first game late in the second half, he had a transition defensive opportunity where it was just him and Colin Sexton coming right at him. And he moved his feet, you know, he was on his heels, he moved his feet well enough to be able to prevent the layup, and then he contested, went straight up, made Sexton take this high-arching layup that went high off the glass and missed. And it was just, you know, it wasn't a blocked shot, but it was just a moment that showed you how versatile this young man is. And he's been doing things like that all weekend and into this week. So I'm just really impressed with the way he's been able to move his feet. We saw him Tuesday get switched on the Trae Young a ton in pick and roll. And then even today against the Mavs and Jalen Brunson. So he held his own in those situations. So guarding in space, which was a big question coming in, he's proving now that he can do that against, you know, summer league caliber talent. But, you know, will he be able to do that come the regular season? It's going to take some time, but he's showing a lot of positive signs right now.
Darnell Mayberry from TheAthletic.com. Go there. Go to the Chicago section, and you'll be able to find his Bulls coverage. He's with me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So while you've been covering the Bulls, this is what I said, and I want to get your reaction to it, okay? So on the station here at ESPN 1000, I've been hearing this coast-to-coast on some of my Sirius XM NBA shows that I've been doing as well, where there's some people that don't understand, like, this whole NBA culture and this whole thing of the Summer League and the importance of it. And what I said is that the Summer League, I equate the Summer League to Major League Baseball spring training, how people lay out on the lawn and watch dudes that have numbers 70s, 80s, and 90s. You don't even know who they are. I equate it to like training camp, because for the Bears, it's right around the corner. People will be going to Bourbonnais, Illinois, down the 57, and they'll be watching practices with no pads. I see like college football spring games where you see across the country, especially in the South, 80, 90,000 people checking in, watching pretty much glorified scrimmages. And I said the same thing here about the NBA. Like, people are not understanding the uprising of this league. Sekou Smith was on this show from, you know, Sekou from NBA TV.
Right.
Sekou said to me, he says, if you would have told me that the NBA would have this much attention on it based on when I was at the Palace for the Mouse in the Palace, he said, I would have hit you straight up in the face if you would have told me that the NBA would survive that, right? And so maybe you can explain it better than I can, but for me, as an NBA fan, I completely understand that the NBA Summer League and people traveling all across the country to see some of these young cats, they're doing it because they enjoy the league. And for some, that's a disconnect, and I don't get that.
Not only are they enjoying the league, but, you know, more than any other league, it's a star-driven league. And you can see the next, you know, whoever it might be, Kevin Durant. Well, I'm not going to say LeBron James. You can see the next, you know, maybe Russell Westbrook or, you know, any up-and-coming star, Damian Lillard, whatever, Steph Curry and Trae Young, you know, people, he's got those comparisons. So I think it's a star-driven league. People know that they can go out and see the stars of tomorrow, today, and also social media. The NBA has done a tremendous job of really promoting itself on social media and really being the best league, in, if not the world, and certainly our country, how it uses social media. So I think a couple of different things have made it become such a huge event that people really enjoy. The only problem I have with it is in Vegas and it's hot. It's just extremely hot out there, and that's the only problem. It's for a long time. I wish they could shorten it. And man, that heat, there's nothing you can do about Vegas, but it's a good time. It's a great league.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I know you got your ear to the ground on some of these other issues in the NBA, so I'll ask you, if Carmelo Anthony signs with Houston, how does he fit with that team that loves to get up and down the floor?
I'd be very, very concerned if I was a Rockets fan, because you lose Trevor Ariza, you lose Luke Mbamute, and you replace them, two defensive-minded, selfless individuals, with how they play the game I'm speaking to, with Carmelo Anthony, who is not what he was offensively, and he struggles defensively. So, you know, one of the things that made the Rockets so great last season was not just their ability to score, but also their ability to defend. And I think they've lost two major, major components of that defense and losing those two guys. I'd be concerned if I was a Rockets fan, and that's the swap that you make.
And Chris Paul at 37 getting the max. God bless him, Darnell.
One of my all-time favorite players, but, man, I understand where you're going with that one. And I agree, it's going to be it's going to look pretty bad when he's you know, 37. His game translates, though. You know, I mean, he's going to be able to be one of those Jason Kidd types, go out there and play until he's 40. So, but he's going to be making a lot of money doing it.
yes, he will. We're going to find out for sure now. We're going to find out that narrative for sure. Were the Rockets a Chris Paul away from getting past the Warriors? We'll find out because he's got a lot of money in a few years to try to get that done. As we talked to Darnell Mayberry from TheAthletic.com with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So the Kawhi Leonard saga is still ongoing. Why do I have deep in my spirit that if Pop and Kawhi could be in the room together without anyone interfering, that Pop can get him to come back and play for him next season?
The power of Greg Popovich. He's one of the all-time best for a reason, and not just on the floor with the X's and O's, but just how he treats people. You know, I've talked to Will Perdue about the difference between Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich, and he was talking about just the level of care that he has for people. I genuinely don't think that there's anything damaging to their relationship between those two. I think they could work it out, but it's probably just a mixture of things that has led Kawhi to want out. But, I think he still has a lot of respect for Greg Popovich, and, you've seen so many players go through there who have the same level of respect for him, even opponents. So, yeah, I think if it was between those two, yeah, it could be worked out. But there's so many other things involved with these situations that you just never know.
As far as Oklahoma City, I know you still know what's going on there with the Thunder. I really liked what they did, Darnell. I really liked what they did. It's more than just a Paul George signing. Two things stood out to me about that first night of NBA free agency. One is that Jerian Grant is back, which I think is going to be a key for them. The second thing is that Paul George has that clause in his contract. After that second year, there's an opt-out. Whether or not he's going to stay or not, that's a big question. But I think that those two things stood out. So how much does the signings increase the chances of the Thunder being a better team, being in the top three or four, do you think, in the West?
I think they still have questions to figure out. You know, is Russell Westbrook going to revert to 2016-17 Russ, where he's just kind of commandeering the basketball and trying to do everything on his own? Is he going to get Paul George involved? Is Paul George going to show up? You know, this is a guy who had 5 points in an elimination game, and he's gotten some heat in Oklahoma City for that. So it's great that they were able to re-sign him. To me, that's a first step, a big step, don't get me wrong, but a first step. They're bringing back pieces, Jeremy Grant extension that you mentioned. Raymond Felton, they bring him back. He had a big impact off the bench for them last season. So they're making some quality moves. And I think the next piece is, what are they going to end up doing with Carmelo Anthony? And what could they then turn that into? Are there any other moves that they have in store that they might be able to do to upgrade that team? Because it's currently constructed. I don't think they're competing with Golden State. And the Lakers might have just surpassed them with LeBron James. Houston's out there, and San Antonio's going to be there probably with or without Kawhi Leonard. That's how good they are down there. So, they're still looking at a fourth seed at best, perhaps. So, they've got some more work to do this summer, I think.
What's the next piece you're working on?
Oh, man, summer league's wrapping up. I went to a family reunion put on by Nike in the city. It was at Loyola. Last week, I talked to a couple of Chicago legends out there, trying to mentor the kids and be positive role models for them and show them that there is hope and a way to believe in yourself despite what might be difficult circumstances. So that'll be on The Athletic later this week, and just more summer league coverage. Wendell Carter Jr., man, I'm telling you, I think the Bulls got a really good one with the 7th overall pick. I think fans are going to really love him.
All right, we look forward to that piece, those pieces, as a matter of fact, on TheAthletic.com from you, Darnell. As always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks again, Jonathan. Have a great night.
Absolutely. It's Darnell Mayberry from TheAthletic.com with us here on Under the Hood, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I don't know if, Felix, you don't have this on, but Rodon getting the job done for the Sox, an opportunity for the White Sox to maybe shut out St. Louis, but then again, Soria is there to close it out, so this might be 5-4 St. Louis before it's over. Because right now it's 4-0 White Sox, a rare shutout opportunity for the White Sox. against St. Louis. And a very good house, by the way. Cardinal fans know how to travel, I'll tell you that for sure.
They sure do.
Guaranteed rates. Ooh, that's a really nice house on a beautiful night. But you know Cardinal fans came up here because there's a lot of red in the stands. But Rodon was terrific, and now Soria there to close it out for the Sox. This very well could be 5-4 St. Louis before it's all squared away because that guy's terrible. You are listening to Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Back with you tomorrow between 7 and 10 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We'll talk some Cubs baseball. We'll do a Thursday. What did I call it, Felix? What are we doing for Thursday? Like a Thursday
throwback Thursday.
Throwback Thursday. Do we have any idea what that is?
Not yet, but we will have something for you tomorrow.
I wrote it down, and now I don't even know what it is. I still don't know what it is. But we're going to do some kind of throwback Thursday for you to call in with tomorrow between 7 and 10 here on ESPN 1000. LeBron James. I said about LeBron James that when he went to Los Angeles that he would never be the man, meaning that he would never overtake what Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal and Jerry West and Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and so many others have meant to that Lakers franchise. I see a couple of stories here from LeBron James. Fans flocked to Blaze Pizza giveaway after LeBron James hints he'd drop by. So LeBron James hinted that he would drop by Blaze Pizza in Los Angeles on Tuesday, prompting hordes of fans to descend upon the shop, hoping to get a glimpse of the newest Lakers star, but he didn't show. Blaze Pizza's fast food chain, which James is an investor, had announced it would celebrate James' arrival to the Golden State by giving away free pizzas in select Southern California locations. So as I see this tweet, at Blaze Pizza, you know, Los Angeles, are you ready for the king of all pizza parties? And LeBron James tweets, haven't been to a pizza party in a minute, Culver City? And so it does not necessarily say, Felix, that he'd be there. But he says, haven't been to a pizza party in a minute. People knowing that he's part of Blaze Pizza, thinking, oh, maybe LeBron's going to be there, and he never showed. And so now people are pissed about that. The other story is about LeBron James' mural. The artist paints over a wall because of continued vandalism. So I saw this mural. It says, The King, L.A. It's got a beautiful picture of LeBron James with his beard. And people continue to vandalize it. Like, put on there, We Don't Want You, and La Fraud, and No King, and 3-6, talking about the wins and losses he's had in the finals. And so because of all the vandalism, the mural was taken down. Now it's just white paint. Because in L.A., you just can't have nice things. That's how polarizing LeBron James is. As I mentioned, he'll never be that guy. I know he probably didn't care about the pizza thing, probably didn't care about the mural, but the point is that those are symbols of how people feel about LeBron James everywhere, including in Los Angeles, the place he's going to play for 4 years. We thank you for being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Darnell Mayberry, to Jesse Rogers, to Gary Owen, to Akeem Hicks. Thanks to Felix Reyes on the other side of the glass. Back with you tomorrow, 7 to 10, on UTH.
Jonathan Hood.
And I got what it takes to rock a mic right, yeah.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.